This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on August 22, 2013. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next item on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2013-09, Special Operations Speaks PAC and Robert L. Manis. I suppose I should mention that we did have another advisory opinion on the agenda, but it was withdrawn, so that's why it's not there anymore. Oh, and I see Mr. Backer is in the room. Mr. Backer, why don't you come on down and sit at the table? And I suspect someone will have a question for you, and if not, it's always nice to see you.
Thank you. Nice to see you as well.
Commissioner Walther has rejoined us. Ms. Hemsley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioners, good morning. Agenda document 13-37 is a draft response to an advisory opinion request submitted by the Special Operations Speaks PAC and Robert L. Manis. SOS PAC is a non-connected hybrid political committee that's been registered with the commission since July of 2012. Additionally, it has received contributions from more than 50 persons and has made contributions to three federal candidates, including $2,600 to Colonel Manis, a candidate for U.S. Senate for Louisiana. The committee wishes to contribute an additional $2,400 to Colonel Manis, which would exceed the contribution limits for persons other than multi-candidate political committees. The requesters ask whether prior to making contributions to five federal candidates and qualifying for multi-candidate status, it may make, and the committee may make, and Colonel Manis may accept the additional contributions up to the higher limit for multi-candidate committees. The draft concludes the act prohibits SOS PAC from making and Colonel Manis from accepting from SOS contributions in excess of $2,600 before SOS gains multi-candidate status. We received two comments on the request and one comment on the draft. Thank you, Madam Chair. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hemsley. Do we have any questions for counsel, questions for Mr. Backer, or any discussions on the draft? Mr. Vice Chairman.
I'll start us off. I read the request as putting before the commission a facial challenge to the act regarding one of the qualifications to be a multi-candidate PAC. I'm not sure how we can help on that. I've always found the PAC requirements to be somewhat odd and all that, but that's what Congress passed, and it's not really for me to decide whether or not they are how I would have drawn the line. It kind of is what it is. I pulled out Buckley, and I just want to state this, and maybe I'll give Mr. Backer a chance to react to what I'm going to say, but let me just say this. Let me quote Buckley. Section 608B2 permits certain committees designated as political committees to contribute up to $5,000 to any candidate with respect to any election for federal office. In order to qualify for the higher contribution ceiling, a group must have been registered with the commission as a political committee under 2 U.S.C. Section 433 for not less than 6 months, have received contributions from more than 50 persons, and except for state and local party organizations, have contributed to five or more candidates for federal office. Appellants argue that these qualifications unconstitutionally discriminate against ad hoc organizations in favor of established interest groups and impermissibly burden free association. The argument is without merit. Rather than undermining freedom of association, the basic provision enhances the opportunity of bona fide groups to participate in the election process, and the registration, contribution, and candidate conditions serve the permissible purpose of preventing individuals from evading the applicable contribution limitations by labeling themselves committees. And this is Buckley, and for those who like pinpoint sites, it's at page 35 to 36. So there's that. And, you know, although the FEC is not in the caption, you know, Vallejo was the Secretary of the Senate. The FEC was a party. So I don't see that we can just say, well, that, you know, the Buckley Court wasn't really talking to the FEC in that. And it seems to be, to me, the same argument. Now, I certainly appreciate that times have changed and that certain aspects of the law have been struck, certain things have been put in doubt and all that. But that's all well and good to a certain point for commission adjudication, but it really doesn't work for what I see as a facial challenge to the Act. That can either be fixed by Congress or by an Article III court, but not by an agency. Now, what an agency can do, and this has caused some confusion, and I think sometimes I read the comments that came in. I think the part of the confusion is the sense that, well, the commission does look at constitutional issues, and of course we do. We have to. There's case law, and this is something rather new in the world of the commission. I remember when I first got here, this idea that, well, we don't really worry about constitutional issues at all seemed to be the norm. But if you look at Arizona versus Intertribal Council of Arizona, the recent Supreme Court case, there the majority of the court said that is because we think that by analogy to the rule of statutory interpretation that avoids questionable constitutionality, validly conferred discretionary executive authority is properly exercised as the government has proposed to avoid serious constitutional doubt. Avoiding doubt is a different issue than saying the Act is unconstitutional altogether. And we see this in Horn versus Department of Agriculture is another case, recent Supreme Court case from this year, where the question was whether it's a USDA case and whether somebody had to exhaust administrative remedy by including a takings constitutional argument. And the court said petitioners were therefore free to raise their takings-based defense before the USDA. And the court essentially says that the USDA, if they raise it, they could consider it. So to the extent an agency wants to avoid a constitutional issue by reading a statute narrowly to avoid it, that's certainly within an agency's discretion. And not only is it within the agency's discretion, at least post-Arizona versus Intertribal Council of Arizona, it looks like the Supreme Court says we have to do it. Validly conferred discretionary executive authority is properly exercised to avoid serious constitutional doubt. So if the agency doesn't avoid constitutional doubt, I would say that would be improperly exercised executive authority, putting to rest a longstanding issue at the commission. Then we have all that, which has really nothing to do with this request, as I read this request, because this request seems to say, I think this one is the five or more candidates. And I hear you that it seems that you only want to make three, you don't want to make five, and it's not fair because other people that have more money and have already been established and all this seem to have a little bit of an edge, and they can give more money than you can give. And that all makes sense on some level, but I'm looking at this language from Buckley, which seems to be the same argument that was raised before the court. Now, you know, the statute's been updated. You know, you maybe say, well, there's something different, but then that's going to be my question. Why does this language at Buckley not decide the answer to this without much in the way of any sort of fanfare?
Well, with respect to Buckley's discussion of this, their concern comes down to circumvention. And when they talk about bona fide political groups, they're either talking about those that are not attempting to be circumvent the base limits, or those that are somehow discriminating between people who really have a right to talk in politics and really don't. My reading of that is that when they say bona fide, they mean groups that were formed to be political groups and not attempt to circumvent the limits. And so the issue comes down to purely the question of circumvention. And as we outline in the AOR, we believe rather strongly that the question of circumvention was very well addressed by Congress after Buckley was ruled upon, and that simply because nobody's had the opportunity to challenge it doesn't make it any less defective as a constitutional justification. And absent circumvention as the justification, that provision simply cannot stand constitutional scrutiny.
Maybe you're right, maybe you're not, but I have a statute passed by Congress. I have a Supreme Court case talking about the same language. The language even talks about the idea of favoring some over others. And now you're saying, well, that this, in your case, the anti-circumvention rationale really doesn't apply because you're not really trying to circumvent anything. You just want the higher limit, and it just seems like you should get it. And you know, that's okay. Let's take that as true. I want to give $10,000 to a member of Congress, and I'm not at all trying to bribe him. There's no appearance of corruption in my mind, so I can give that member of Congress $10,000 as a campaign contribution. It seems to be your argument.
I'm not sure I follow. I think our argument is that this large aggregation of all these small-dollar individual donors who share a particularized set of values and interests and want to get behind those candidates who share those values and are essentially required to become a political action committee if they want to support these candidates and these values outside of the PAC or the political party and candidate regime, mm-hmm. they're required to be a PAC. And then they're being told, okay, you have to organize your grassroots speech, and we have to register you, and you have to be monitored, and you have to report. But we're not going to let you have all the same rights as some other groups of people that are doing this because they've been around longer and because they want to give to more people. They have a different set of they want to be more engaged. I think there's the rationale only flies if it's a circumvention issue with respect to having this five-candidate limit, and I think the circumvention issue has been addressed. And
look, that could be. Supreme Court has laid out the 23 burdens that, mm-hmm. that attach to PAC status. Now you don't have the limit on independent PACs, so maybe you're down to 22 burdens. No one questions it's a very burdensome mm-hmm. thing. I've been arguing this for years. You've been arguing it for a lot shorter than I've been arguing it. But we're an agency with a statute, and the question is, what do you want me to do about any of this? I hear you. You think you have an argument. You don't think the government can provide a sufficiently strong interest under whatever level of tailoring a court says this would come under. It looks, even to me, like this is a contribution limit sort of analysis, not a spending limit analysis, but maybe I'm wrong on that. What do you want us to do about it? I mean, it's not really the FEC's job to get into whether we can justify what Congress passed in the first instance, particularly in light of the language of Buckley, right? I mean, isn't this a question really for the guys in the White Dome down the street to fix this?
It may well be, but I'm going to use a somewhat specious example here. But imagine the statute FECA was written 100 years ago, and it contained language that would now be very clearly unconstitutional. For example, women may not contribute to political action committees. Obviously, if that were...
Did Congress take that out?
I'm pretty sure that's not in the statute at the moment.
There wasn't FECA 100 years ago.
But my point being...
FECA passed like 70...
Right, but you know, if there was a provision, I'm using a very, very obviously bad example in order to lay the foundation and narrow it down. But if there was such a provision and it simply had never been enforced, but it was on the books,
right.
And it wouldn't be unreasonable to say, well, look, you know, this provision's on the books. We don't want to risk violating this provision. It's obviously ridiculous. It's unconstitutional. Here's the court cases saying this is not an acceptable. This is discriminatory. And you would say, I would assume we would come here and you'd say, yeah, of course, this is not enforceable. With FECA, you have a much younger provision of law, but I would argue that whatever justification there might have been for this particular provision at the time it was written, subsequent legislation and court activity have rendered it just as moot. It's just not.
Which legislation has rendered it moot?
The 76 amendments, which expanded the protections against circumvention.
But they didn't change this language in the 76 amendments. So they passed other language that rendered language moot that they didn't change?
I would say yes. That, you know, and maybe that's an oversight of Congress, but to have left it in. But or maybe, you know, quite frankly, I'm of the belief that campaign finance laws are inherently pro-incumbent, and incumbents that are looking at the laws that they're writing to protect their own interests are going to pay a lot more attention to the laws that they care about than these smaller provisions that they might not realize are a problem. And to be fair, I don't think this provision was a problem 3-4 years ago. I think the explosion of grassroots political speech in the last 4 years or so has radically changed the level and the nature and the character of individual participation in politics. I don't think you had groups that would have faced this burden in 2006 or 2007. I think now, you know, we may be one of the very first, but there's going to be more organizations that are focused behind very narrow sets of issues and want to be very focused on a narrow group of candidates, and they're going to start facing this burden. So it may be that this is a case of first impression, but I think this is a problem that is arising.
It's not first impression. People have had a problem with this rule for a long, long time. There's been grassroots groups before. You know, they've been on both sides of the ideological spectrum, and to the extent it's not linear, it's circular, all around the ideological spectrum. And it's something that Congress put in to, I think Congress thought it was a good thing. You're going to get an enhanced limit if you band together and you can give a PAC check. I mean, they didn't index the PAC contribution limits. They probably should have, but they didn't. Even if I agree with everything you say about it being an incumbent protection system, I don't see what we can do other than say, well, the statute says you've got to give the five. You haven't given the five, so either go to the White Dome or go see a man in a black robe. I don't think I can say yes if I wanted to.
And that may very well be the case.
Okay. But I just want to make sure we're clear about that, that we're not, you know, because if you come to the comments, the FEC can't justify this, the FEC can't justify that. Congress needs to justify their laws, not the FEC. Right? I mean, whether there's any governmental interest is for those who pass the laws to figure out what they were doing. And, you know, it's rare for me to sort of say, well, I never like the steer clear or just, you know, look, get with the program kind of rhetoric, because I really bristle at that in most instances. But I do note that the making five contributions, you don't have to make the maximum contribution. You can give a dollar to five candidates, and that satisfies that prong of, you give one penny to five candidates, and that satisfies, and that doesn't even get itemized, that satisfies the five candidate part of the three-part multi-candidate test, right?
Yes, but then they would be associating in even a minuscule way with people they don't want to associate with.
And I think they can only find three candidates they want to associate with?
So far, yeah. And frankly, a lot of their effort and work is much more focused on independent speech than it is on candidates. But when they want to get behind a candidate, they want to get behind a candidate in a big way.
And the individual limit, which is the non-multi-candidate PAC limit today, is
$2,600 per candidate
per election. Right, and the PAC limit is
$5,000.
So you're looking at $2,400 difference.
Yes.
Want to get behind them in a big way, another $2,400.
We want to get behind them with every conceivable ounce of strength that we're able to get behind them, would be my client's perspective. They're very strong believers that, you know, if you're on somebody's team, you're on their team. And they deploy the resources to the maximum extent possible when they can. And I think to them, the argument that, well, it's only $2,400, the response is, yeah, but, you know, IBM PAC can give them $5,000. You know, the Teamsters can give it $5,000. Why is our speech, you know, not as valuable as IBM or the Teamsters?
Same issue brought to the Supreme Court in Buckley.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court said it's the argument's without merit. Right or wrong, that's what he said. And at least since Marbury versus Madison, that's the final word, unless Congress tries again with a different statute, and they haven't done that.
I would suggest that the Supreme Court said it's without merit in the context of the circumvention problem that they were addressing, which is since I would argue has since been cured. Obviously, that's my perspective. Reasonable minds will differ on this, and we do get that we're coming here asking for a remedy that the Commission may not be able to give us. But we do think it's incumbent on the Commission to at least assess the constitutionality of the provision, because, again, if it were an absurd provision like, you know, women may not contribute to political action committees, you know, that obviously you would sit here and say, well, look, here's why this is or is not, you know, why what we can do about it and why it's a problem.
That's different, though, and I don't want to belabor the point, because mm-hmm. I think we all know where we're going to end up, I think. It's a difference between avoiding constitutional doubt mm-hmm. and a frontal attack on the face – a facial attack on the statute, right? And you're mm-hmm. hypothetical about the statute. You know, the law says women can't give. Well, there's a mountain of case law that says that's just not going to work, and you're going to avoid reading the statute in a way that's going to crash into the rocks of the mountain of equal protection case law. That's not the same thing at all from what you have here. It's not just a difference of degree. It's a whole different kind of example. And I just, even if I agree with you, nothing I can do about it. I certainly, as you know, I've written about it quite extensively. When it comes to considering constitutional issues and taking case law seriously, I'll put my record up against anyone's. But in this case, that's not what this is. And if you think it does, it burden that. That's a nice test case, and you're going to have to explain to a judge, I think, that. times have changed, and in your particular case, this is just not serving the purpose that the Congress has articulated for the purpose of the multi-pack thing. And I wish you Godspeed in that endeavor, but I can't. We can't. That's not what the FEC does. With respect to this, you're not giving me a lot to work with here, is my point. So I'll yield back, and at the appropriate time, I would like to move agenda document number 13-37. At the appropriate time, could be right now or not, but I don't want to, short-circuit any robust discussion anyone wants to have.
Are there any further comments or questions? Mr. Backer, once again, I think you're in the wrong building.
Happens quite a bit, but at least I get to bring unanimity to the commission, so that's always
not
nice.
Not that it isn't always a pleasure to see you. Something that you said before suggested that maybe these multi-candidate committee requirements have been moot since 1976. I think that would surprise a lot of people. It seems kind of unlikely to me. But in any event, I think the vice chairman's right. This is a facial challenge. You want to bring a facial challenge, you got to go to court. So I plan to support the draft. If there are no further comments, the vice chairman has moved approval of draft advisory opinion 2013-09 as set forth in agenda document 13-37 with any appropriate technical and conforming amendments. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Backer.